Hello and welcome to the Super Mercado Brothers Video Game Music Podcast.
How's it going, everybody?
Episode 20, Yuzo Koshiro.
This is going to be a really cool episode. This is our first episode spotlighting on a composer. So every single track you're going to hear today was composed by the legendary Yuzo Koshiro. And originally we wanted to do something really special for our 20th episode, but we actually kind of were planning some things out. So now the 25th episode, you guys should be looking forward to, because we have something very, very cool planned for that. But this is still going to be a really cool episode. And in some ways, maybe it's fitting that it's our 20th because it's our first composer spotlight.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely going to be a lot of diversity in the music here today. One thing very interesting about Yuzo Koshiro, he's kind of a chameleon with his style.
Oh my gosh, totally, yeah. I think this episode is going to be not as much about what we have to say about certain tracks, and more just about playing all this whole, when you play this playlist of tracks, it almost gives you a summary of the guy. I mean, we'll talk a little bit about some of the biographical information about him and stuff like that, but definitely Will's right about the chameleon aspect. Incredibly diverse composer, really unique guy. I just have a lot of respect for him. So what you heard was actually a track called Essential Vitamins from Super Adventure Island, and that was actually an SNES track, but that sounded incredibly advanced. It's definitely, if someone's a fan of Yuzo Koshiro, it definitely sounds like vintage Yuzo Koshiro. But obviously, it still sounds very different from a lot of his classic games. But I feel like that's the kind of music that Yuzo likes the most. Like, I feel like that's what he listens to on his own. He just really likes that kind of like house, laid back techno kind of sound. So we're actually going to get the ball rolling here. We're going to talk. This is pretty interesting. So Yuzo Koshiro, we talked a little bit about him in our Ease episode. But one of the couple cool things to mention is he did take composition lessons from Joe Hisaishi, as well as taking piano lessons from his mom. And his mom was kind of the one who taught him a lot about music and introduced him to classical music and stuff. So we'll kind of dive into that a little bit more. But the first job that Yuzo Koshiro got was at the age of 18 in 1986 for the Falcom Corporation, which would eventually produce Ease and a lot of classic soundtracks. And it was for a game called Xanadu Scenario 2, The Resurrection of Dragon, and that's part of the Dragon Slayer series. And basically what Yuzo did is, as a teenager, he made his own PC-88 demo songs. So what he did is he sent in a demo tape of PC-88 music to Falcom, and it wasn't that they hired him and then he composed music for the game. They just took those songs and put them in this game. So I think they just kind of bought the royalties to him. So that was his first, I guess, job, but he composed it just by himself. So we're going to play a couple of those early demo tapes, songs that eventually went into that Resurrection of Dragon. And it's interesting to listen to because it definitely represents a very early, I would consider slightly immature, style of Yuzo Koshiro. So here is opening. That is the opening from The Resurrection of Dragon. It's so interesting to me that it's kind of evident from these demo tapes that Yuzo wrote that he pretty much came up with all the Ease, you know, composition elements that we talked about. It's definitely a little bit more primitive, and it's not as composed as well as, you know, the Ease stuff, but it's all here. You know, all the origins of that music is all here. And I think it's kind of cool to think that this 18-year-old, you know, kid composed all this stuff.
Yeah, I agree. It's very interesting. It definitely sounds and rhythmically feels very similar to that Ease music. But I agree with Carl. It definitely sounds a little bit like it's composed from a less mature and experienced composer. But I think it's a very interesting story of how this music got put into the game. And it was probably a big surprise to Yuzo Koshiro and probably a pleasure for him to get to have that kind of
success.
Yeah,
so I think it's fitting that we're playing this, because this is really the start of it all for Yuzo. I mean, this is his origins of video game music right here. We're going to play another track from this game. It's called Clepsydra, and this is level 9. It's one of the dungeon themes that they use from his demo tapes. Here we go. Clepsydra, level 9. Man, it's crazy to think that, and we're gonna be getting on this in our next track we're gonna play. But this was a year away from Ease. So I mean, we did say it was a little bit kind of more of an immature style of Yuzo. He was only 18, but what a difference a year makes. And you know, maybe that's kind of a good segue into our next track here. The next track we're gonna play is from Ease 1. We've played it on our Ease episode. It's, I think, one of the best tracks of that game. And this was a year later. This was 1987. A 19-year-old Koshiro composed this. And it's mind-boggling to me a difference a year makes. So yeah, with that being said, here is Palace from Ease 1, composed by Yuzo Koshiro.
Listening to Palace from Ease 1. I think there's a whole lot to love about this track. What I really like in the beginning is how simple the melody starts off, but you might not have noticed, but each time it repeats that melody, it changes it up slightly and it lands on slightly different notes.
It does.
And it's really well done. And then when it gets to that sort of B section, it changes rhythmically and then it keeps adding more notes. So it starts in like, it starts off like and then it goes and it keeps like adding more like notes, and it's very like interesting, and it keeps building little by little. It feels very natural. It almost feels like an authentic like piece of music, not just like copy and paste like typical video game music. It's constantly changing.
It's very powerful.
Like hear that, and here it'll change. Here some of those other notes are added. And it's very interesting how it keeps building up and towards the end. So it always feels like it's adding new material or changing something. It doesn't just feel like copy and paste.
And I think one thing that's so interesting is it might go hand in hand. The fact that you have this teenage composer who's obviously full of a lot of vigor and energy, I feel like maybe that's what made the Ease soundtrack so fresh, is that it was coming from this new face in video game music. It wasn't this kind of seasoned composer, because a lot of the stuff he was doing, like in what we said about Ease before, and I didn't really necessarily research that as much. I guess I didn't realize he was only 19 when we recorded that episode, but maybe that's the reason why it was, all that stuff had never been done before. I don't know, maybe just the fact that he was just so fresh and just coming from a different place than a lot of other composers at the time. I think Miko Ishikawa was quite a bit older than him who worked. And I think that's a little bit evident too when you listen to her tracks. Like, she did a lot of the more kind of jazzier, like softer tracks.
Right.
And I think it really kind of, I feel like even in this Ease soundtrack, it's still immature sounding. I mean, not this track, but a lot of his more kind of classic dun 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 Ease music, it is believable that it was composed by a 19-year-old.
Well, I think some of his rock esque like influences, I think he was very inspired by a lot of the 8-bit NES music at the time.
He was
like,
yeah.
Mega Man and definitely Metroid, I believe, and a lot of just rock. You can tell he was inspired by that type of music as well, and maybe that perspective and that those influences weren't as evident at the time for some other composers, but that's just speculation.
And it was more of just like the way that he used all the instruments and the rhythms and all that kind of stuff, and just the way it came together. So kind of piggybacking off of that, we're going to play a track from the game called Sorcerian, which I think came out a year after Ease, and this was also a Yuzo and Miko Ishikawa soundtrack. We did play a track from this earlier, I think in our Forest episode, but if someone didn't tell you, you might believe this is straight out of Ease. It sounds classic. So this is a track called The Lost King's Scepter. To the Lost King's Scepter dungeon from Sorcerian. And yeah, this definitely sounds like right out of Ease. A lot of kind of the quintessential Yuzo harmonies that he's using and the rhythms and stuff. But yeah, I can't get enough of this PC-88 music.
One thing that's interesting to me is this song is good, but it's hard hearing that bass sound that sounds like it's ripped right out of like Sonic the Hedgehog. And coming from a few weeks ago when we played Sonic the Hedgehog music, and I think even last week, listening to Masato Nakamura's like extremely melodic and constantly like authentic, interesting bass sounds, it's hard to go from that to where Masato, it's like every note that the bass lands on it for a purpose, and it has this incredibly catchy, like, rhythmic drive, and it's just, it's so incredibly melodic, and in addition to that, it sounds incredibly authentic. Like, if I were to hear that in, like, a song, I would think, wow, that's a really kick-ass bass track.
Yeah. No, definitely they're doing different things, but I feel like this is one of Yuzo's kind of tracks where it's not as incredibly melodic. It's more about the emotional effect that it creates and kind of the combination of the gluing of all the harmonies over each other. But in general, it's really crazy. We'll talk more about this as we go on with this episode. Is kind of relating to what Will said about his chameleon ability as a composer, is because he does have the chops for like really great melody, and a lot of soundtracks obviously showcase that, but he's also content with not always giving it to you. And I think that's something that for me is really impressive about Yuzo, is that sometimes he won't give you all he's got. Sometimes he'll just give you a little bit, and it really makes the times when he does give you all he's got just so powerful, at least for me. So we'll touch on that a little bit as we go on. So now we're going to move on to a game called Legend of the Wizard, and this is Dragon Slayer 4. And this came out for the MSX, I believe. That's the version we're going to play. And he composed this. I think he didn't compose this alone, but this is one of the tracks that I'm sure he did compose. And even if you just listened to it, you could tell, oh, yeah, it's definitely Yuzo. This is the ending theme. Here we go. Ending theme from Legend of the Wizard Dragon Slayer 4. I love the MSX sound. It's a little bit cleaner NES for me. That's like what I consider it.
Well, to me, it almost sounds like Game Gear or like Sega Master System.
Oh, yep, definitely. It's pretty clean. There's something really clean about it.
Yeah, there's definitely a clean sound. It definitely has a little bit more pure sound for the the square and like triangle tones.
Not
they
as
sound
compressed.
A little bit more pure, where like the NES, it has its own unique like color, but it still sounds kind of like 8-bit.
Yeah.
I actually prefer the NES to the MSX 2, mm-hmm. but I think it's interesting that Yuzo started off composing for all these like computer, like mm-hmm. Japanese computer systems. It's interesting how he rose to the rank, and like some of our later tracks we'll be playing from like Kid Icarus Uprising are fully orchestrated.
Well, he would consider himself, that's his roots, is early computer music. That's the way he composed, and for years later, he would still compose on the PC-88. We'll talk about that as we go on here, but yeah, it's a pretty cool track. Definitely you can hear the Yuzo influence in there. We're going to move on now to one of his more famous soundtracks that he ever did, and this is a game called Revenge of Shinobi for the Sega Genesis. It's really interesting when you talk a lot about some of Yuzo's Sega Genesis soundtracks. Something about them, they hold a lot of weight, and I feel like they're more important than the music takes itself. I don't know exactly how to explain it, but there's just something really powerful about these soundtracks that for some reason so many people just responded to, and they're just considered some of the best soundtracks for the system. So we're going to play a track from Revenge of Shinobi. This is called Chinatown. Chinatown from Revenge of Shinobi. And yeah, it's just one of those things where on paper, the notes and the chords, it's nothing too amazing, but the way it comes together is just, it holds so much weight for a lot of people.
Yeah, I think one thing, what Carl was trying to mention is how, like he said, on paper, how it doesn't necessarily seem, he used the word important, because Yuzo probably didn't take it as seriously as some of the like the players. When they listened to it, they really responded to this music, and I think part of that has to do with a little bit of it is probably just the not being able to separate the nostalgia from quality and just the mixing of like the game experience with the music. But I don't think that's a discredit to the music itself. I think it actually means that it's serving its purpose if it really feels integrated. And I mean, it definitely has that, some of those pentatonic sounding notes.
Oh, yes.
It definitely gives it that like Chinese feel because it's like Chinatown.
Well, the whole game has that, yeah. I mean, in general, also, we heard that on the arcade version of the first Shinobi, that one song we played, which was very cool, but very pentatonic and Eastern sounding. So that's definitely he taps into a lot of that kind of style in this game as well. But this is regarded as one of the most classic Genesis soundtracks, for sure.
Yeah, it definitely, I think it fits the game really well.
And it's quintessential Genesis music. It just, the FM stuff really makes it come home, you know.
That's really catchy that sort of recurring thing happens.
Yeah, that di-di-di-di-di-di-di.
That's great.
Very catchy. Now we're going to move on to something that I think Will is going to be excited about. I think he's really going to respond to this. This is a Super Nintendo game called ActRaiser. And this is definitely considered one of Yuzo Koshiro's best soundtracks. And it was definitely pretty revolutionary for him at the time. He had never done something quite like this. I think he really challenged himself to go out of his comfort zone, at least at the time. Because this was it was for the SNES, but it was in his head trying to be a fully orchestrated score. And he really did a great job with this. I mean, I think personally, out of almost any SNES game that I could think of, I think this could translate to an orchestral arrangement flawlessly. I think this is a brilliant soundtrack. And he also did ActRaiser 2, which is very good as well. Maybe sometime in the future we can play a track from that. But so we're going to play a few tracks here from ActRaiser. The first is the most famous and recognizable from the game. This is Opening. This is Opening from ActRaiser.
I really love how it goes back to that sort of trumpet and horn fanfare at the beginning and how they're panned to the left and right. It's really epic, and it like creates this sense of distance, and it's really well done.
I completely agree with
what you were saying about how this would translate to the orchestra. It's a little bit over the top, like if you use this exact orchestration, having those strings and that much octaves, just having the descending root note, it's a little bit too much overkill, but it sounds perfect here.
I think it's really impressive for Yuzo, and this is still a fairly young Yuzo at the time. This was maybe like 91 or something, I can't remember exactly when this was, but 90, I think maybe 90-ish, and So for him at that time, I think he really wanted to prove, he was still in the kind of the area where he needed to prove to a lot of people like how good he was, and I think he really put everything he had into this soundtrack, and it's evident in the music. And it's kind of interesting because I can still hear the Yuzo qualities in his harmonies and his melodies, but it's just fun because he's going for a completely different genre. So we're going to keep on going. This is a really cool track. It's called Filmoa from ActRaiser. Let's take a listen. Filmoa from ActRaiser.
I really feel like this would be right at home in the Castlevania series.
Oh my gosh.
Especially, like, to me, what's interesting is these instruments sound so good. They almost sound like PlayStation quality.
Uh-huh.
but the compositional style reminds me of like old, more 8-bit, maybe a little bit of Super Castlevania quality of music, especially the whole intro, the chords used, and then the way like the rhythmic feel changes a little bit when it starts the song, and then how it has before it repeats, it has that like classic church suspension. It just feels very Castlevania inspired, and I'd be incredibly surprised if there wasn't at least some inspiration.
Oh, totally. Yep. I mean, how incredibly organ heavy it is, and those fast licks and stuff. Yep.
Well, because I really believe that Yuzo Koshiro was inspired by other video game composers.
He was.
Because especially his young age, the fact that he even thought to send it to Falcom, he must have really liked video game music and wanted to work with that technology. Mm-hmm. So he was definitely probably more aware than certain people that discovered it as a new medium as it sort of came along, like Koji Kondo or whatnot.
Oh yeah, definitely. So we're going to play another track, one more track from ActRaiser, and this definitely is very much more original Yuzo. I don't know if we're going to hear as many striking influences from other games. This is called Peaceful World. Peaceful World from ActRaiser, composed by, maybe it's Yuzo Koshiro. Maybe we should say Yuzo Koshiro.
I don't know. I don't think it really matters, because in Japanese, I mean, they'd pronounce it completely differently. It might even be like Yujo. But I mean, I don't know. I don't speak Japanese, but
this is such a gorgeous track.
It's very beautiful. It's very reminiscent of like Beethoven, Bach type.
Yeah,
like
for me, I feel
old,
like
old like classical like church type of music.
Yeah, I feel like this is his mom's influence right here, teaching him, you know, classical piano at an early age. I feel like, I'm not sure about this, but I just feel like it was pretty natural for him to write this kind of classical music. I think it was probably ingrained at such an early age. So I feel like this is kind of him just paying homage and just kind of doing what's really natural for him. I mean, it's cool, he had those chops, but he didn't always use that. You know, it's not like every game he did was incredibly classical. It's one of the things he's known for. He has that skill, but a lot of his soundtracks aren't like that at all, and that's just one of the other levels of his versatility, which I really respect.
Well, and what I think is interesting is the reason why I think this was very, very intentional. It wasn't just like, oh, I'll just do a classical piece. The way that he limits his chord choices is also very evident that he's trying to write a classical type piece, because there's certain chords that I feel like him naturally that he just want to go to if he were just being a little bit more lazy, that he weren't thinking about. But it sounds very intentional, and like the chords that certain things resolve to, and it just sounds very old fashioned. It sounds like hundreds and hundreds of years ago.
So now we're going to move on to a game that we've played a couple tracks from before. This is Sonic the Hedgehog, the Master System version, in the Game Gear version. And this is a really cool soundtrack. I mean, like we said, a lot of it was kind of his you know, taking the Masato's pieces and converting them. But he did come up with some original pieces, and some of them are quite outstanding. We did play the Bridge Zone, which is classic. And actually, that was sampled in a Janet Jackson song a few years later. The chorus of that song, like melodically, is exactly taken from that Bridge Zone song, which is a kind of a fun fact. I don't know if you knew that, Will.
Was that intentional?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
There's like always a Jackson connection.
There's always a Jackson connection.
Sonic music.
That's so funny. But in addition to that, we did play, I think, a bonus stage, which is also quite good. This is also a very, very cool track. This is called Jungle Zone.
That's Jungle Zone from Sonic the Hedgehog on the Sega Master System. And what I think is so interesting about this one, I almost feel like Yuzo Koshiro forgot if he was making a Sonic the Hedgehog game or a Mario Land game, because this sounds, it almost sounds like he's trying to impersonate, like, the Mario music, because it has that sort of, like, swung, happy, fun feel.
I definitely think, I'm almost positive he probably didn't hear Masato's stuff before he started his work on it. He probably was just, relating it to, platformer, okay, I'm going to try to go for this. And I think it's kind of funny when you hear this versus the Masato stuff, it's so incredibly different. There is something very endearing about it. It's great music that
it
he
might
wrote.
Be that the Master System or, like, the Game Gear, it might be that they have to slow the game down quite a bit, and it might not be able to move at the same, like, fast-paced level. And maybe some of those sounds and the soundtrack and the music played in the Sonic the Hedgehog game, really, it sounds good because of the advancements that the Sega Genesis had and what it was able to do with the sounds and the number of channels. So I think he's probably just being smart and, well, I have to do these 8-bit sounds. I have to go for making a good song, not just making something that sounds like Masato Nakamura.
Yeah, that's a very good point. But I would be shocked if he heard Masato's stuff first and then you know what? Okay, I'm going to do this.
Because there doesn't really sound like a pop influence whatsoever.
I definitely think he started his original compositions before having ever listened to Masato's stuff, and then had to rearrange some of that stuff. But yeah, it's kind of quirky. I think people like that about that version of the game, is that it's kind of quirky. The music is very kind of polarized in that sense. So now we're going to move on to one of his other incredibly legendary soundtracks for the Sega Genesis. This is called Streets of Rage, and I think it was called Bare Knuckle in Japan. And this is a very interesting time for Yuzo. I think he was listening to a lot of house music and kind of a lot of European music, because when you listen to this soundtrack, it does not sound anything like a video game. And it's what I was talking about earlier, where Yuzo doesn't always give you everything he has melodically. And that's really evident in this series of games. He's more concerned with the beat, a laid-back kind of groove and emotional quality, very sparse melodies. Something that, again, on paper doesn't add up to anything that special, but it's something that holds so much weight for a lot of people. And I would think almost more personified in this one track. This is the opening to the first game. This is called The Street of Rage. This is The Street of Rage, composed by Yuzo Koshiro for Streets of Rage. Such a groovy track. When that piano line comes in, I'm just moving my head to and fro. Ding, 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 ding. It really fits. It's totally 90s. It really sounds like just some kind of really kind of classic European house music of this time. Right. I think he was definitely listening to a lot of that when he was working on this game.
Yeah, it's definitely, it's very well done, and it's crazy going from something like that classical sounding piece to something like this.
Oh,
they're
my
just
gosh.
Complete opposite ends of the spectrum, but they both sound authentic.
And
they're
really,
both really effective. Like, they're both effective in the game, and they both serve the purpose of what the music is trying to evoke, and it doesn't sound cheesy or dumbed down because of a video game. Like, the limitations of the hardware that he is using, he's still very conscious and cognizant of that, and it, the compositions work really well, and they just sound so good. Like, at times listening to this, I forgot that it was video game music, especially when that low droning bass note came in near the end.
I feel like if you take this and that ActRaiser song and play them back to back, I feel like that's evidence enough of, I think, Yuzo being probably the most diverse video game composer of all time. I don't think there's any other composer who has written songs on such other ends of the spectrum like that and done them so well. I think he is probably the most diverse and eclectic video game composer of all time. And that's something he's known for.
He's one of the most diverse. I mean, there's a lot of video game composers can span various different spectrums.
But with Yuzo, what's so interesting is he's known for so many of those so well. Like, there's a lot of people that would say, oh my gosh, this is classic Yuzo. And then you'd play ActRaiser and they'd be like, oh my gosh, it's classic Yuzo. There's not a lot of composers that are known for all of those styles.
I think it's
well.
More just, this is classic whatever that game is. This is classic Ease, or this is whatever.
Well, one thing really
interesting, sticks to a style with a game. And I think when we were talking about the Ease games, we might have said, oh, this sounds like classic Yuzo Koshiro. Well, I think it was just for those games and those RPGs that he was doing with Falcom. And part of it might be as he grew and developed as a musician and composer, as he was like growing up and making these games at the same time, that might have been happening. But what I think is more likely is he wanted to stick to a theme. He was inspired by something, whether it was like a pop song or some sort type of rock music or whatever he was inspired by. He, for the most part, wanted to have a consistent sound throughout those games. Or with the case of ActRaiser, he wanted to fit something that would fit that specific level or scene or whatever.
I agree for ActRaiser, but I actually kind of disagree with you on the Ease case. I actually think, and that's something that we're going to get into later, is that I think it was quintessential Yuzo music. And I think he wasn't necessarily trying to think about, okay, what could this game use? I think he was just doing his thing. And what's really interesting is later on in some of his kind of later generations, you start to hear soundtracks that go back to the Ease style. And for me, there's something so rewarding about hearing that, because it's this guy who, for so long, I would hear these soundtracks like ActRaiser and Streets of Rage, and I'd be like, okay, looks like he's moving away from that style. But no, he does have that in him. He's just choosing, and maybe you're right, he's choosing depending on the game. So I guess
well,
in some ways,
he grew up. That's what he liked when he was younger, and now he grew up, but people still like that music, so
he
just decided to do something.
He's still giving
that
to people. That's very cool. So we're going to play one more track from Streets of Rage. This is called Good Ending. Good Ending from Streets of Rage. One cool tidbit about when he composed the music for this game, it's kind of interesting. He was composing it on the PC-88, actually. So for all these Streets of Rage games, he made the music on the PC-88, which at the time was an outdated way to compose music. And then when he was done, he transferred them to the Genesis. So, and that's actually a recurring theme with Yuzo, is since he kind of was so accustomed, and that was kind of like natural for him to write in the PC-88, that's like what he'd been doing for years, he was still using that to compose music well into the 90s and even later on, which is, I think, it's kind of a cool, unique thing. And in some ways, maybe that's a reason why a lot of his music was at this certain standard, is because he was doing it in a format that was comfortable to him.
Right.
That's a nice little wind sound there. So yeah, that's a good ending. We're going to now play a track from Streets of Rage 2. And like what I just said about the PC-88, I actually found this is a PC-88 version of this song. So obviously this game came out for the Sega Genesis. And I don't know if it came out. It might have come out for the arcade as well. I think it was just Sega Genesis. But this is a PC-88 version of Streets of Rage 2. This is a song called Slow Moon. Is Slow Moon from Streets of Rage 2. And yeah, this game did not come out for the PC-88. It only came out for the Genesis and I think Game Gear and Master System. But since he did compose it on the PC-88, he obviously had those versions of the soundtrack. So you can find those versions. I actually bought this from iTunes.
Yuzo, he's such a master of melody and counter-melody, mm-hmm. It sounds. And I would also, like, rhythmically, like, he's great feel. And in that last track, I didn't really mention it too much, but some of the jazzy chords that he uses, it's really impressive. Again, the diversity. And he's such a talented musician. Like, it's so amazing everything he's able to do. In my opinion, I don't think he's as good a melodist as a lot of my favorite composers. Mm-hmm. But as far as a talent and being able to be a chameleon, for video game composing, I mean, it's no wonder why he's done so much, because he's so talented and he's able to do different things.
And the groove is always at the forefront. I mean, it's just, oh my gosh, that groove's so hard. And even if you didn't have those really interesting melodic and counterpoint ideas happening, it's still a very rewarding track. And the fact that you can have those, it's winning on all fronts.
Yeah, everything about this track, all the sections are really catchy.
Yep.
Which is something that I can't necessarily say about all of his music. Even though all of his music is really well done, I think part of it is the type of song that this is trying to be is just really, really catchy.
Yep, totally. So now this is kind of interesting. We're going to take a little bit of a jump here because we're going from Mega Drive to Dreamcast. And I think there was a little bit of a gap here for Yuzo as far as his work, his composing stuff. But this is really, really cool for me, is because we talked a lot about the fact that he took composing lessons from Joe Hisaishi. And today, this is the first example. We did notice a lot of his influence on the East soundtracks earlier, but today, this is our first example and probably the most extreme example in Yuzo's library of work that shows Joe's influence. And if you could put this song in a Miyazaki movie and you would not know that it wasn't Joe. So this is a really gorgeous song. It's just a solo piano track. It's pretty quiet. There's later on, we're going to have to play some more tracks from this game, because there's a lot of other really good tracks as well. But this was from a game called Shenmue. I think that's how you pronounce it. Shenmue or Shenmue. And a very kind of interesting game. I think it's like an RPG, but it has all voice dialogue. So I think it was a little bit revolutionary to be able to have the capacity to have a huge amount of like voiceover work. And I think it's a pretty like atmospheric and immersive game. And the music's really, really pretty. It was worked on by a few composers, but I did find out specific tracks that Yuzo alone worked on. And this is one of them. This is a track called Rain. That is Rain from Shenmue, and that is just incredibly Hisayashi-ish to me.
Try saying that 10 times fast.
It's a very hard word to say, but yeah. At some point, we'll have to play some Joe Hisayashi tracks on this podcast, because we've talked a lot about him, and for someone who's not familiar with them, you know, you could do yourself a favor maybe if you just YouTube some of his tracks. He's an amazing composer, and once you listen to his stuff and get, you know, familiar with his stuff, and then you come back and listen to this, you're going to start to hear what we're talking about.
Yeah, for those that don't know, he did he composed the score for a lot of Miyazaki films.
Laputa Castle in the Sky, Kiki's Delivery Service, Princess Mononoke, Spirited Away.
Yeah, and a lot of his tracks are like that, just like solo piano, or they incorporate and feature piano.
But a lot of the melodic ideas and the different intervals that he's reaching out to and coming back to, as far as in a note kind of sense, are incredibly Joe Hisayashi style to me. And I feel like since he did take composition lessons from him at an early age, a lot of that kind of stuff was ingrained in him. And that's why this is kind of, I feel like, just him being himself and just, okay, Yuzo, you need to write a really gorgeous piano track for this game. Okay, I'm going to do this. And it just so happens that it has a lot of the kind of influences of one of his early mentors. So it's cool to hear that.
Can I make an observation?
No, you can't actually.
About you is you like to call things something something-ish or something-esque a lot. Like, or like you say, this is, what do you say? Like,
vintage something.
Vintage ease, or what? You use this word all the time when we were doing our ease episode. Uh-huh. You said, like, this just sounds like
quintessential ease.
Quintessential. You say that all the time.
I need to stop saying that word. Thanks for letting me know that.
I think the point when you realize that you have to stop that is saying Hisayashi-ish. Like, that's way too much of a mouthful.
I apologize to everyone for that.
No, that's okay. I just think it's funny.
We're going to move on now to, I guess this probably represents the final, like, hurrah for Yuzo, as far as, like, what we've seen so far is his generations. I feel like this was the start of his last, like, kind of rise as a game composer. I feel like, you know, he did Shenmue, and he maybe did a couple things here and there, but he was kind of off the map for a little bit, and I think this was the start of his triumphant return. There's a series of games called Etrian Odyssey for the Nintendo DS, and I think they were only released in Japan, if I'm not mistaken, and they're incredible soundtracks. They're really, really good. But the cool thing about them is he incorporates PC-88 sounds with, like, modern, good kind of rock and drum sounds.
Are they PC-88?
They're PC-88. And when you listen to it, it's absolutely no doubt. And then I did find out, I actually researched, he did, you know, he actually composed these on PC-88.
That's so funny.
There's actually two different versions you can get of the soundtrack. You can get this version, which incorporates both, and you can get just the PC-88
version. Does he
not
know how to not use a PC-88?
No, he does.
Is that like how he used to do it, and he likes it like that?
He does. I think you're right, and you're both things are right. That is how he used to do it, so I feel like he's really comfortable with that. And since I said this is kind of going back to some of the E style, that's what I was talking about earlier. So I feel like since he's going for that, it was more comfortable to write the way he used to write. But he's obviously able to write with a lot more modern, you know, technology and stuff. I think it's really cool that he's embracing his just kind of his history and his kind of origins. I think it's awesome. So anyway, this is a track from Etrian Odyssey. This is called The Withered Forest. Withered Forest. That's an incredibly gorgeous melody. It's very mysterious, and it starts off really dark, but then this part here has a little bit more hope. There's like this little kind of undercurrent of hope within this melody.
We should have played this in our forest levels.
Yeah, we really should have. I discovered this after that. But yeah, this is
a
pretty good soundtrack.
This also fits into the idea of a mysterious forest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. This would have been a good addition. Wish we could go back in time. I didn't have any tracks from Etrian Odyssey 2. In my opinion, it didn't have, that memorable track. A lot of it was just kind of things that I'd already heard in the first one. But I do have a few from Etrian Odyssey 3, which I think is outstanding. And this is kind of what I was talking about, of the really cool combination of PC-88 with modern sounds. And this first track we're going to play is called That's the Beginning of the Adventure. Called That's the Beginning of the Adventure. For some reason, I don't know what it is about Yuzo's music, but it really, I feel like I have this connection with him. He just, it affects me so powerfully. Like, this track, it's so emotional to me. It just really hits me. I absolutely adore this track.
Well, I think it's really nice and that, like, it's almost like a celeste or something. It's very gorgeous, and it's so sparse, and like how slow the melody is paced. Mm-hmm. It really works.
There's
also
so much space.
I like the chord progression that happened at the beginning, and that it doesn't repeat that after the beginning.
That was just kind of like the intro,
and it takes you in a direction, and that it's very beautiful. It's not like a rousing fanfare, but it's very interesting. You almost don't realize that after a while, like, the chord choice is just, it stays on a chord for a really long time, and then it changes. It's absolutely beautiful.
Yeah. We have yet to hear what I was talking about with the combination of the modern and old, and we're about to hear it. So this is exciting. This track is called The End of the Raging Waves. End of the Raging Waves. This is so cool. I think if you're a big fan of Yuzo Koshiro, to hear this must just be so rewarding. To hear him be so, like, self-aware of his past and the fact that he's combining those classic PC-88 sounds with modern instrumentation. You don't hear that a lot, and I just have a lot of respect for that, personally. This is definitely getting back to the Ease feel.
It's crazy hearing those really nice drum samples with this. It almost sounds like it's being, like, played live.
It does.
Like, all those crappier instruments are put into someone's keyboard.
One thing I know for sure is the drums. He's using Addictive Drums, which is a plugin that I have that I use. So I recognized right away the sounds of the snare and the toms and stuff.
How do you know it's Addictive Drums?
Because I just everything about it, the way it's mic'd, the specific drums, it's unmistakable. It's not just that it's Addictive Drums; it's the default sound that opens when you first open Addictive Drums. I've used it for hours, so I've been listening to it for a lot, so I can recognize that. So that's cool for me.
Don't you mean years?
Yeah, I guess.
I've been using it for years.
Well, I didn't mean to say I've been using it. I mean, I've listened to it for hours. Like, I've heard
those
sounds.
You've spent hours using it. Not like you just got it a couple hours ago.
Yeah. Why don't you keep correcting me? Why don't you keep going with that?
Because I just want to clarify people, because they might get confused.
You want to clarify people?
I said clarify for people.
You didn't say for.
You know
we
what?
We can go tit for tat. We can keep going back and forth.
I think it's tat for tit. Whatever.
All right, we're going to play one more track from Etrian Odyssey 3. This is called Those That Slay and Fall.
Ah, you really got under my skin when you said those things about,
Man, that's unmistakable PC-88 sounds. You're hearing the bass sound and that chime sound. How cool is that he's combining that with the modern rock stuff? Because, like, he didn't have to do that. He obviously composed it with PC-88, but he could have translated all of it. I mean, maybe it's a case of him being lazy and leaving some of it as it was, but I don't know. I think it's really cool.
It's very cool.
Yeah, not a lot you really need to say compositionally about these tracks. They sound kind of familiar to us as far as, you know, what we've heard in the E-series and stuff like that. But it's very, very, very cool. So now we're going to move on to our track of the week. This is from a game called Seventh Dragon, and it was a Nintendo DS game. And this is, this might be my favorite modern soundtrack that Yuzo has done. I just really, really like the soundtrack a lot. And again, he started off composing it for, I don't know if it was PC-88, but it was definitely like an 8-bit format. So there's two different versions that you can hear of the soundtrack. The original, the one that he made for the DS with Modern Instruments, and then his 8-bit style. So every single track you can hear two versions. So what I did for a couple of these tracks is I made a combination. We'll start playing them with the DS version and then it'll transition into the 8-bit version. And it's actually really cool to hear the differences. So this first song is called Battlefields, Swords Bursting.
We'll be right back.
right, this is Battlefield Swords Bursting. And coming up a little bit here, we're going to transition to the 8-bit version. But really, really strong melody. I love the intro. That's my favorite part. That's there's something very mysterious and kind of just really emotional about that part. But this part definitely gets a little bit more rocking and is something that, again, if you're a Yuzo fan, I feel like it'd be really rewarding.
This actually reminds me of Mega Man, actually.
Yeah, I can hear that.
Compositionally and the melody. It reminds me of... I would say 16-bit era Mega Man, either, mm-hmm. whether it's Rockman and Forte or Mega Man 7.
I got that vibe from the intro. The very intro, I totally agree with you. I definitely got that same vibe. So coming up here, like I said, we're going to transition. And it's really cool. It's going to make you smile hearing this transition to the 8-bit version. So let's take a listen here. That's so cool to hear that transition. Yeah, this is definitely... It sounds like NES.
It's funny that he added reverb to the lead.
Uh-huh.
Because, like, if he wanted to make it really authentic, he would have added a delay track. And what's funny is it sounds actually like he limited, so it's just the lead and the bass. But it's mm-hmm. obvious that it's just reverb. He didn't add, like, delay.
Yeah.
So that's really cool. This is so authentic. This would have been mm-hmm. right at home in like an NES.
It's so fun
catalog
to hear that.
Game.
Yeah, I love to hear that transition.
I wish he would have done like NES music. That would have been really nice.
Yeah, he did. I mean, he did a little bit. I think that that Dragon Slayer game also came out for the NES. So I think he did just a teeny bit, but not too
much. I would have liked to hear some Yuzo Koshiro classics. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, I think mm-hmm. he probably would have used a little bit like tighter, more melodic type of music for the NES, because I think in general that type of music translates the best. And that's the one type of genre where I don't feel like we got a lot from Yuzo just because of
true. The
type of games that he did. But that, mm-hmm. I would have liked to hear that, because
yeah,
I know
that's...
he also probably would have been great at that, because he's such a chameleon.
But it's cool, we get to hear that now with this Seventh Dragon game. So we're going to play one more track from Seventh Dragon, and this is another one I did another combination with. And we're going to play more music from this game. I wanted to play a lot, but for time, we have to cut some of them. Later on, I'm definitely going to, maybe in a show and tell, I'm going to play a lot more music from this game, because I personally love it. This is another track. This is called Land of Conflict. This is kind of the first foray today into really authentic, like, kind of orchestration that sounds pretty realistic. And we're going to hear that coming up in the next game we're talking about. But this is cool to hear that, because it still sounds like, sorry, Will, vintage Yuzo. But it's cool to hear that with more kind of modern, pretty good-sounding orchestra sounds. Definitely not real, it's fake, but it sounds good. It sounds very rousing, and for a game, it's incredibly effective.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely sounds very authentic, again, which is, I feel like I've used that word a lot today, but I feel if there's one word I would use to describe all of his music, if I could find one word to encapsulate every single one of his pieces, I would say that it's authentic.
Yeah, and coming up here, it's going to transfer to 8-bit, so let's take a listen. This is fun. That's so cool. Will, what version do you like better of this? Do you like the 8-bit version or the real version?
I mean, I always prefer 8-bit. Unless it's, like, actually orchestrated.
Yeah.
But I prefer 8-bit over, like, cheesy string samples. Well, also because, like, compositionally, it's so much more limiting, and, like,
uh-huh.
it's so much more impressive how he was able to translate that. And it almost, like, it takes it, it doesn't feel like... orchestral anymore because certain like rhythmic things he has to do, it almost feels like pop music.
I just think it's so cool. It's so rare and so cool that we're able to hear these two versions and kind of compare them side by side. I just had a really good time listening to that this week. So that's cool. Now we're going to move on to a game that Will mentioned a couple weeks ago. And at that time, I had no idea Yuzo was involved in it. I just wanted to look into it because it was supposed to have really good music. It's a game called Kid Icarus Uprising.
For the Nintendo 3DS.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of different composers worked on it. And luckily, I was able to find a breakdown of specific tracks that Yuzo worked on. There were some tracks that he collaborated with, but there are also some tracks that are just him. So we're going to play two tracks that are solely composed by him. This first one is called Magnus's Theme.
This is very beautiful. This is Magnus's theme.
Yeah, I think this is one of the more popular themes of the game so far, at least.
Gosh, I love piccolo and flute trills.
Yeah, I feel like Yuzo's music really lends itself well to a nice orchestration like this.
Well, what I think is interesting is, yes, I think it does when he writes for it, but what's interesting about this, I feel like a lot of this, he wasn't writing for, like, conventional orchestral, like, especially at the beginning. A lot of the chords don't sound conventional orchestral. They sound like...
Yeah, it reminds me
vintage
of, like...
Vintage Yuzo Koshiro.
Well, yeah, it reminded me of, like, when you heard those Smash Brothers arrangements of classic video game music. It's really fun, but you can tell it wasn't written for an orchestra. It's taking these simple
this
chords
definitely
and melody.
Feels like that.
And that's what's... I like that, but I agree with you that he was... He probably composed this on the PC-88.
This makes me wonder that I feel like he probably didn't do much orchestration for this at all, because I feel like if he did... It would have sounded more authentic, because I think he can do this. I feel like he probably just wrote, like, a generic video game type of song.
I know
he did.
And then
some, like, older type, or just, like, some orchestrator arranged what he wrote for orchestra, and it has that sort of Smash Brothers quality that you were talking about.
I know that he did. The only game I know he did orchestration for was Shenmue. I know that he orchestrated some other people's pieces, because I think there was full orchestra in that game. But I don't think he did the orchestration for this game. But yeah, it's always great to hear video game style music done with an orchestra.
Speaking of Smash Brothers, I just thought of a track that I'm doing for my next show and tell.
Okay.
It's going to be
That's a great one. Dun, dun,
dun, dun. That's beautiful.
So now we're going to play one more track from Kid Icarus Uprising, and this is one I think Will's really going to resonate with. This is a track called Wrath of the Reset Bomb. We'll be right back. Wrath of the Reset Bomb from Kid Icarus Uprising. What do you think about this one, Will?
To me, this is the most authentic film score sounding. This would definitely work in a film score. And I don't mean that as a negative. I feel
positive.
Very melodic. Like, this is great orchestral, like, movie score.
This sounds like
music.
John Williams to me.
Well, parts of it remind me of John Williams. It's funny. It reminds me of a lot of different composers I like. The very beginning reminded me of Hut of the Baba Yaga, the piano piece by Mussorgsky. And then the middle section reminded me of John Williams. And this part actually kind of reminds me of, like, Michael Giacchino, who's, like, a modern film composer.
Yeah, and Michael's great because he kind of has a nice balance of more modern sensibilities for film score, but also what's great is he's so melodic.
And he's also incredibly diverse.
He's
a fantastical, like, melodist, but he does music in very different genres. It's really interesting.
I like that you said he's fantastical.
Yeah, he's very fantastical.
He's very fantastical. We might have to play some of his music on
the podcast. Well, yeah, he actually started off as video game composer. Yeah.
So that was pretty much our podcast. That just flew by. I mean, that was a lot of music to play, but I think that gives you kind of a nice, if you're not familiar with Kishiro's work, a nice overview of, wow, this guy is diverse. I mean, you can play tracks like Essential Vitamins to this, to the fanfare from ActRaiser to the Revenge of Shinobi. I mean, it's just incredibly diverse, but for me, it really resonates with me. I'm such a big fan of his work, and I love the fact that he was still composing in recent years using the PC-88, and just kind of, he has a love of classic, and he's still a melodic game composer. He's not composing treating it like a score. I mean, he is in this, like Will's saying, it's still incredibly melodic. And so that's something I really respect about this guy
a lot. Well, I mean, I'm really glad that if they're doing orchestral music for games, like especially Nintendo games, they're leaving it in the hands of Koji Kondo or Kishiro-san or like people like that who have experience in other forms of video game music and adapting that type of melodic sensibility into the like orchestral scores, and that would work if you wouldn't need that if you guaranteed that you had like a John Williams or someone that writes melodic music doing the music. But I feel like if they just hired modern like people who do film scores like Hans Zimmer or what have you, which a lot of third-party games for like Xbox or PS3 do, like Call of Duty or whatever, it just sounds like just ostinato or just like
it's just kind of by the numbers.
A lot of Modern Warfare is like it uses some strings, but it's mainly just like rock guitars, like it's like, how many times have you heard that before?
Exactly.
There's nothing interesting there. And with Yusuke Kishiro, it's like he is such a chameleon and he can do everything, and I feel like everything he does sounds authentic to what he's attempting, and it also is just really damn good. And
it is,
it's like, it's flawless execution of whatever he's attempting. It's really impressive, and I think it's also such a unique story from his like starting off as just this young kid wanting to work at Falcom to being able to do games for them and rise to the ranks to now he's still working and he's still making great music. I think it's a really cool story, and it's really exciting for people who play video games to know that he's still out there making music.
Very well said, Will. I completely agree with that. It's really fun to know that there's someone like Yuzo out there still making great games. So we're going to leave you with a very relaxing track. This is the sequel to Seventh Dragon. It's called Seventh Dragon 2020, and it came out for the PSP. This is a track called A Brief Rest.
Okay, take care, everybody. I'm Will Brueggemann.
I'm Carl Brueggemann.
We really appreciate you tuning in for this week's podcast. Take care. And next week, our theme will be introduction and title screen music, so we really look forward to that.
Definitely. All right, take care, guys.
Peace out.